What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club! I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And this is our special New York Comic Con edition of the show. I'm very excited about this. Very excited to be here. Have you guys hit up the con at all yet?
Yes. Oh, no, the Comic-Con? No.
Oh, okay. Oh, you mean like the con, like...
I was running scams on people on the streets doing some three-card Monty.
Nice. How'd that go?
Good. I lost everything. That's why I'm nude here.
Yes. And Pete, your con is you're very drunk right now.
Yeah, that's right. You know, if you skip a meal, the booze hits harder.
Oh, hey, that's just chemistry right there.
Now, I want to mention we do a regular Tuesday night show, and at the Tuesday night show, Pete... always has a Punisher shrine set up right on the side. He has Punisher slippers, a Punisher hat, a little piece of John Bernthal skin. I think it's his chest skin.
You were not supposed to talk about that.
I wasn't supposed to. Okay. Well, forget about that part. We'll edit that out of the podcast later. So we're at a different venue this time. We're at Caveat downtown. Pete, of course... You didn't take a plastic bag full of Punisher stuff and bring it down here, did you?
No, why would I do that? We're in a new
venue.
That
would be weird.
I'll tell you what, you say rah, 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 definitely makes it sound like you didn't do that.
Yeah, definitely didn't do that. Thanks for bringing it up, though. I appreciate
it. No problem. He did, though. He did. I asked him what the plastic bag was. And it's
hidden backstage because there was shame attached to it.
Yeah. I was feeling pretty good about it until Zelda was like, you didn't really do that, did you? I did.
I am very excited about the guest that we have on the show tonight. For those of you in the live audience, you've seen one of these folks already. He is from 30 Rock, American Splendor. He has a new special on Netflix that you can check out. It's exactly 84 minutes long.
I think it was 86. I think you said 86.
No, I think it was 84. You're very drunk. The other guest is the writer of Absolute Carnage, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Silver Surfer Black. Ladies and gentlemen, Judah Friedlander and Donny Cates!
Come on up!
Hello!
Welcome.
Hello!
Thank you.
Have a seat. Come on down.
Hello. Oh, my goodness. I just sat on a book. Okay, there we go. Guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for coming out tonight.
Thank you for having us. Excited
to have you here. Donnie, you're sitting very close to me and right here.
It's true.
First of all, I want to get one thing out of the way before we get into it.
Oh, no.
You are writing a lot of stuff now, but when we started the show, what was it, 13 years ago?
Yep, birth.
You were an intern at Marvel and used to come to the show all the time. And I can't help but think we inspired you on your journey and could take full credit for all your success.
Yeah, we launched the ship.
Yeah. No, I was an intern at Marvel in like 2010 or so like that, and Jordan White, friend of the show,
and my
first editor, was the only editor at Marvel at the time who would associate with interns, and I didn't know anyone in this city. I'm from Texas, and so he very kindly would invite me out to the show, and I used to sit yonder over there and dream about being on this stage with you handsome gentleman.
Oh man, well now after the show you can finally throw in the towel, you can finally give up.
That's right,
you've reached all of your dreams.
You actually, really quick, you actually did, and I've told you this a million times, write one of my favorite comics.
Oh my goodness.
The Throg joke
thank you,
is one of the best Thor frog-based jokes I've ever read in my
life.
Let's just say that's a very specific category.
It is. And it's
weird. There's only been five or six of them.
Yeah. And look no further for the best one.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that.
Don't let that compliment go to your head, or more specifically, your forehead.
Your forehead.
All right. All right.
Let's talk about all the stuff you're doing. You have a ton of titles that you are working on right now. First one, biggest one that's coming out, your first event, Absolute Carnage.
Yeah.
For those who haven't been picking it up, what is the general idea of that book? What's the pitch line for
it? Oh, boy. So the long and short of it is, real simple, Cletus Cassidy, who is Carnage, has been resurrected from the dead by a cult who worships the god of the symbiotes as a being named Null. And he's on a quest to murder every single person who has ever worn a symbiote in the Marvel U, which, if you've been reading Marvel Comics the past 30-odd years, is damn near everyone.
Yep.
And so Venom, along with this nerd named Peter Parker, are trying desperately to save everyone while Carnage is on a murderous warpath across the Marvel U. And so far, it has not been going great.
So something we were actually talking about on our last live show a little bit that I'm curious to get your take on. What is it about symbiotes? What is it about these suits, this Venom suit, that has taken over the entire Marvel Universe? What is appealing about it to you as a writer?
Everybody wears a symbiote suit at some point.
At some point. Well, I think that part of it, like the part where you want to see people wear suits, is it's always fucking rad to see people in new costumes and make new toys. That part's always cool, right? The symbiote in and of itself, going back to Peter Parker wearing it right out of Secret Wars number 8, and then going into the black suit, costume saga, and then into Eddie Brock. I think it's never been done better than with Eddie, right? I always tend to think that Venom it works best when it's a bit of a metaphor for addiction. Eddie Brock's a guy that has wavered back and forth, being a good guy and a bad guy. People ask me often, is he a good guy or a bad guy? I always say he's a guy who wakes up every single day desperately wanting to be a good guy, but he has this shadow that he wears that veers him off of his path. And if that's not addiction, I don't know what is, right? Having this kind of this dark voice in your head that strays you from the man that you want to be, right? And so I think that it's always a wonderful exercise to kind of take people down a path of either giving them everything that they've ever wanted or giving them everything that they've been afraid to become. And symbiotes are a good metaphor for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about this a bit backstage. You just finished Absolute Carnage here at New York Comic Con.
I did, yeah.
And you had some special help.
Oh, my God. I went and did the Diamond Retailer breakfast this morning at 8 a.m.
Great
dude. If you can get in, open a comic book store just for the pancakes.
And the retailers cook the food themselves.
Yeah, right? We make them do it. Yeah, it's for us. Yeah. No, I went and did that, but I didn't have anywhere to be until like 11 o'clock for my signing, and so I have so many deadlines. So I've been traveling so much, so I just went to my table before the show opened, and I sat down with my laptop, and I was like, I'm going to bang this thing out. And so many very nice people who were there, like, I guess VIP guests or something, were coming up and being very sweet. And at a certain point, my manager came over and was just like, hey, do you want to be able to just write and, like, put your headphones on? And I was like, yeah, I kind of would. He was like, I got you. And I don't know what I thought he was going to do.
Wreck some heads?
He had just started punching people in the mouth.
Breakfast heads? But, like some 8 a.m.
Yeah, but long story short, what happened was I ended up finishing Absolute Carnage number 5, sitting at my table, flanked by security guards.
Is there a better way to write?
It's the weirdest thing. I am not that important.
Shakespeare often had a full military outfit.
That's right.
Really?
They don't talk about it. I am a classically trained actor,
yes.
As
true.
All know.
Of course.
So
it's
I
true.
Really have studied the bard.
That, though, is leading into... You're not leaving Venom at that point.
Oh, no.
You're leading into
no.
Venom Island,
yes.
And other events. And
yeah.
As far as I've heard the story... You sat down at the first Marvel retreat with your Venom plans and talked for like a solid hour.
Oh my
through
God,
your plans,
an
right?
hour at least. I tend to like over plan. I tend to know exactly what I'm doing for like the when I get on a title that I'm very passionate about. I sit down and I plan it out for years and years and years. And you kind of work in where you think events will go and like where. When the story kind of evolves and blooms to a point where you need to get the Avengers and Iron Man to come in and stuff, and those are very good natural selling points. My first summit where I had to talk about Venom, I walked through like 5 years of story, going all the way through to the end of Ryan and I's run. And Absolute Carnage kind of marks what we call the end of like Act 1.
That's wow. Early.
Yeah, yeah. So the events of issue 5 will be setting up the next huge threats and things that are coming next.
Wow. Let's move to the cosmic stuff since you're working on that side as well. You're wrapping up Guardians of the Galaxy. What was it like to take on that title? What was your mission there?
I wanted to get back to, for so long, the Guardians comic itself has kind of been, has kind of fallen into the shadow of the films, right? And the films are wonderful, and I love them. But the cosmic stuff and the Guardians specifically that I grew up with was brutal. When you have, like, epic plots on Earth, they're a little bit hinged by how big they can get just by their territory, right? In space, everything can be the biggest end of the world, like no holds barred, Jim Starlin-y, Abnett Landing type of stuff. And the stuff that I liked was, Abnett and Landing Guardians of the Galaxy run was Saving Private Ryan in space. It was brutal, yeah, right? Yeah. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to bring it down to a darker tone. People keep on saying that issue 12 is the end of my Guardians tenure. I wouldn't get too attached to that. I've kind of been the cosmic guy. Showrunner is the title that we use. I've been kind of like facilitating and looking over all the cosmic stuff since I began on Thanos. My time overseeing the cosmic side of Marvel is just beginning. I have a new thing I'm going to be announcing tomorrow at Comic-Con that will give you will show you how much bigger my plan will get.
So think about space.
Yeah.
And think about Donnie writing space. So
yeah, okay.
What are the options that we have there?
Well, I'm going to say a sun.
A sun?
Uh-huh.
A new character like called just the sun? The sun.
The sun.
That would be crazy. What
uh-huh.
a movie book.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the sun is important.
That's right. That's true.
Gives life.
You guys are crushing it.
And obviously solar energy taking over.
Yeah.
Very fun. Ego Living Planet is a cool person.
Yeah. I've written him.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. Silver Surfer. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that because
we move on, I just wanted to say in Thanos, Cosmic Ghost Rider, as being the Punisher fan on the show, was amazeballs. And I just wanted to thank you for your work on that.
Well, thank you so much. It's a weird thing. Cosmic Ghost Rider is a character that me and my friend Jeff Shaw created in Thanos Wins that we never in a million years thought was going to catch on. And now there's like, he has his own solo series and toys and Funko Pops and statues, and it's very bizarre.
He's sort of the new Punisher, right? He's like the...
Hey, fuck you for saying
that. He's like the Frank Castle everyone expects.
Yeah, he's like Punisher, but like fixed.
Yeah,
he's like, exactly. Now he's good now.
Finally.
Better.
Yeah.
Just better.
Yeah.
It just took him going to space and aging millennia
to get over that.
Yeah.
And then some.
And also just being a new character named Ghost Rider in space.
And he finally got over the picnic.
There you go.
A little bit.
Yes. Let's talk about Silver Surfer Black, though, for a second. I think that's the last of the things that at least you have going on for Marvel right now that we know about. You love that title, Justin.
Very much so. I feel like I've called it the Sandman for Silver Surfer.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Like it just creates a mythology, and it puts him in a journey that you really feel the depth of what he's going through, and it puts him into a whole new mythological side of the Marvel Universe that I feel like he hasn't been in.
Well, thank you so much. I got that book because I was actually in Dublin hanging out with a buddy, and he knows Trad, and I actually went to college with Trad at art school, and he was that good then. And we've always wanted to do a book, and we just crossed paths in the schedule. And I was in Dublin, and Declan Shelby, who's an amazing artist, told me that Trad was free, and I was like, wait, what? And he was he was like, I think he wants to do like a Silver Surfer thing. And I was like, give me 2 seconds. And I called CB and I was like, whatever this is, I want to do it. And so since I've known Trad for like 10 years, I just called him and I was like, well, what do you want to do? And he was like, I don't really, he's an artist, right? So he thinks in, you know, big set pieces and like these things. And he had this idea to kind of frame it as a knight's quest. Like every issue, he's a knight on some sort of a noble thing, right? And so we started talking about it. And so much of my work is dark, very, very dark. And not pessimistic, but very much in embracing the abyss type of thing. And so I wanted to write something that was a little bit hopeful, a little bit more ascendant. And so we kind of stumbled upon this idea of you know, light versus dark, like this noble knight fighting against darkness, and this idea of Null and his dragons would be a very good foe for a knight. And you'll get to see that play out way more in Silver Surfer Black number 5. The knight thing really, really comes to a head. And it is, in a lot of ways, a structural inverse to my Thanos Wins series. Thanos, in Thanos Wins, Thanos is shunted to the future to embrace death and to look death in the eye and see what that means. In Silver Surfer, he is shunted to the past to look at hope and birth and life. And so I've always kind of thought of Thanos Wins and Silver Surfer Black as kind of set pieces either end.
Cool.
That's cool.
Very cool. Let's turn to Judah, since you have a lot of stuff going on as well. I do want to talk about this, If the Raindrops United, your book, which is very cool, and it only costs a penny. Is that right?
Well, it's out of print. It came out a few years ago. So I believe you can buy used copies online for a penny, and the shipping is $3.99.
Nice.
And so how much of that do you see, Judah? How much are you raking
in of the
that?
Penny?
I make $40.
Nice.
Excellent.
The economics of that, Amazon, that's how they get you.
It's amazing.
No, it's funny. We were talking about backstage. You're not, you say you're not really a comic book guy, but this
I'd be lying if I was. I think it's a great art form, and I just... You know, there's only so many hours in the day. Like, you know, people ask me, do you watch this TV show, that show? I'm like, there's not a current TV show I watch, you know.
I'm the same way.
I'm just busy, you know, but I love it, you know. And me and my brother used to, like, co-collect when we were kids. And
oh, nice.
I was always a slow reader, so he would finish them, and I'm still, like, on page 4, and then he would just sort of tell me everything that happens in them and stuff. We were really into the comic book. This is in the 70s, called Nova.
I've written a little bit of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. There was, because back then when it first came out, it was there weren't that many of them. I think they only went up to maybe 20 or something like that.
Yeah.
But that was always a favorite of ours. I think it's an incredible art form. I'd just be lying if I said. I'm not a comic book expert. You know?
Yeah. But, well, I'm really curious then, though, why did you want to embrace the graphic form for If the Raindrops United? Why was that important?
Well, when I was a kid, I used to do my own. I always did a lot of art as a kid, and I used to do my own comic strips sometimes, political cartoons and another cartoons, usually single panel. And I remember I was touring a lot. And this was after 30 Rock had finished filming. And, you know, stand-up I've always been doing. I've been doing that since 1989. I remember I was touring a lot. And to sort of deal with anxiety, I kind of started drawing again. Because when I was a kid and even throughout high school, I used to do a lot of animation, clay animation as well as drawing animation.
Oh, wow.
And so I got back into, you know, I'm traveling so much, I got back into... to drawing a lot, and you know, whenever if I'm at the airport waiting or whatever, you know, just start drawing.
Yeah.
And after 6 months or so, I realized, well, I think I might be forming a book here, because I had about 50 little, you know, cartoons, you know, single panel cartoons, and I was like, So I started pitching it around, and most people were not interested. One company was interested, and then I kind of spent like a year and a half straight just, you know, I mean, still doing stand-up, but working on that book.
That's
kind of full-time.
Yeah.
When you were doing American Splendor, did you check out any of Harvey Pekar's stuff? Were you into that?
Yeah, so American Splendor, that came, we filmed that in 2001. It came out in, we filmed it at the end of 2001. It came out in 2003. And so when I had the audition, I thought it was very interesting. And I thought it was very, and I don't mean that in a put down, because I know that can be a put down.
Yeah, sometimes. No.
I mean, I've been put down that way before by people.
Judah's really interesting.
Yeah. I remember I got fired off a sitcom once, and then I was actually kind of glad I got fired off of it, because they had me doing my character doing an old joke.
that's been done before.
Just the worst.
And I don't want to do that.
And you're like, can I?
And they wanted to make that my catchphrase, and they kept adding it throughout the show.
Oh, it's a bummer when they're like, that's going to be your catchphrase.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
then, you're going to say that 9 times.
Yeah, and I know the guy who wrote the joke, who's to do the joke.
Oh,
so,
man.
And then, and I was, I worked Monday, I worked Tuesday. It was one of those sitcoms where you rehearse all week and they tape it in front of an audience on a Friday night.
Yeah.
So I remember the next day I was going to tell them, it's like, we have to change this line, you know. And and then they called me up that night and fired me. And I was like, happy. Because I just couldn't go through with it. And yeah, so anyway, so when they fired me, I wanted to know, like, hey, what's your reason, you know? And she goes, well, first of all, I just want to say, I think you're a really interesting actor.
So, that really, it's like, oh, thanks. So, really so soft as the
preface. When I said I thought the comic book was very interesting, I mean, it was fucking interesting. Yeah. I didn't mean that as a put down. So, anyways, that story's a lot longer. I don't need to get into that. But, yeah, so when I got the audition, it was cool because it was, you know, I was playing a real person. You know, I was auditioning to play a real person on real comic books, and I was not aware of the comic book at the time. And so the first thing I did was I went to, it was St. Mark's Comics.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No longer open.
Day, I know, R.I.P. Sadly ended.
I think earlier this year, I think. So I went there, and I looked through. They had a few, they had, I think, a current issue, and then they had a couple of anthology books. And so I bought some of the stuff, and then I just, I didn't have that much money, so I just looked through some of the other books to really get the flavor for it, you know. And it was like, you know, his book was sort of like the opposite of what you would think of a normal comic book at the time, where it was, you know, kind of a superhero, but just of, you know, instead of all these great things, that book, that comic book was about the things you would cut out of a normal
story. Yeah. It's like if Clark Kent took off his glasses and became sad.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like if it was, yeah, if also if it was just Clark Kent typing.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, and just waiting.
Just the news.
At regular speed.
And his typewriter, the ribbon got twisted, and nothing else happened. And, you know, so that was, it was very good. So I thought it was a really unique and interesting take. And then I played Toby Radloff in that, who is, who bills himself as the genuine nerd.
Yeah.
And he was a real guy and a real nerd. And, you know, the definition of nerd is, you know, has changed over the years.
Oh, yeah, man.
That's very cool.
It was one of those things where it went from being, like, you know, from personal experience, like getting beat up for being a nerd, to now it's, like, cool to be a nerd.
And that was earlier on tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You beat the shit out of a bunch of jokes. Yeah,
fuck you, Pete.
You're totally right. So if, you know, if you're a certain age, if you're probably, I don't know, 40 or over, your definition that you originally knew the word nerd from is completely different than what it is today.
Yeah.
And so Toby's a real nerd. You know, he was not the modern-day nerd. You know, he's an original nerd. And so it was, so I wound up getting the part, and Toby acted in several straight-to-video movies. There was Killer Nerd, Bride of Killer Nerd, and another one called Townies.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know about that. That's awesome.
He filmed them all. Wayne Allen Harold is the writer-director of them.
Oh, sure.
Friend of Toby's. They're all these low-budget kind of comedy, kind of horror exploitation movies made in Cleveland.
Wow.
And, yeah, they're really cool. And I collected, for years, I collected rare VHS. I actually found some of Toby's movies that the directors and producers hadn't seen, so I was able to watch Toby and kind of, you know, learn his mannerisms.
That's wild. So
like
you
that.
Had access to the character you were playing that no one else.
Yeah,
it was like a perfect situation.
Yeah, they had some stuff, but I got some videos that they had not seen.
Then
on my second audition, or maybe after my first audition, they actually gave me some clips of Toby from a local Cleveland cable access show to study him.
They were like, beat that.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, buckle up, dude.
Good. It was really helpful. And then the night before filming, I met Toby, and he gave me his full life story.
Wow.
And so, and that was crucial because, you know, Toby, you know, he talked about, you know, how horribly he was treated by so many people and getting beat up and all these things. And that, you know, that really helped me play him, you know, psychologically, to have just to have that, you know, within me to play him. You know, so not just the physicality.
Yeah, I would say one of my favorite parts of the movie is when the camera just pans over from the actors to the real people. And just makes it.
It kind of makes the movie.
Yeah, it totally does.
Because Toby is such an over the top guy.
Yeah.
And talks so loudly.
And it justifies what you've been doing.
People, right. Some people, when they see me in it, they're like, this guy's really overdoing it.
Yeah. Yeah, you go here and he's like, oh my, you know, he's nailing
it. Toby.
Yeah.
Cut to Toby. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they put in the real Toby. And they're like, oh, okay. This
wow, Judas killed it.
Judas killed it. Yeah. It's such a subtle performance.
Because most people don't know I'm in the movie because I don't look like me. I don't.
Yeah,
talk
yeah,
like
yeah,
me.
It's true.
And
it's a completely different look.
Yeah,
chameleon.
I'm sort of trying to like relaunch my acting career a little bit, and like sometimes I'll say to an agent or somebody that I was in that movie, and they'll be like, "Oh yeah, you're great in that." I'm like, "Can you describe a scene that was in?" And they can't because they may remember the movie, but they don't know that was me doing it. Yeah. So it's like, so it's very weird. But
but it's also kind of a compliment to you.
What's that?
It's also kind of a compliment.
Yeah. No, I'll take it. But it was a really cool experience making that.
I also love the idea that they were like, we need to cast like a nerd for this role, and they're like, should we go with a guy who has videotapes that we don't have of the guy that was playing? It's like, I feel like he might be the nerd we need.
Yeah. Here's a funny story. One time. I haven't seen Toby in a few years, but when I do shows in Cleveland, I'll often hit up Toby and meet up and he'll come out to a show. And so one time, we have some hobbies that are similar. Like, I like going to junk sales and thrift shops.
Yeah.
Like, real thrift shops where it's like the size of a Walmart and everything's like $1 to $5.
Yeah, and it's like basically garbage.
Yeah. So I went
to Dirt Mall. I love Dirt Mall.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Love Dirt Mall.
I haven't heard that term. That's great. Yeah. Dirt Mall. It's awesome. One of them was a Dirt Mall. It was an outdoor junk sale. It was
the best. Yeah.
And then Toby took me to a rummage sale that his church was having. Mm-hmm. And it might have been, I can't remember if it was a full-time little thrift shop or if it was just a big sale they were having. So I go there, and there was a lot of good stuff. And I got a couple cool things. I got a Beavis and Butthead VHS, which contained stuff that was not released on DVD. That was cool. And then I got one of these audio cassette players that had two headphone jacks so that two people... It was like one of those things from elementary educational school. Yeah. And so I'm checking out, and each thing was $1. And I got something else, too. I can't remember what it was. But those two items were items that Toby donated to the church.
No way. That's amazing.
It's like, what are the odds?
Yeah, very odd.
It's like we have the same fucking taste. It's like,
that's great.
That's so good.
It's so weird.
It's beautiful. He's just standing next to you like, got you, dude.
Yeah, bro.
He's like, oh, yeah, those are mine. Yeah, I donated those.
I just took you for $2, kid. You just got played.
It was a very interesting performance. Let's move on anytime. Let's move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because I come out to you guys. It's your audience questions.
Yes.
Woo! And for that, a couple of things about that. All you have to do is ask a question either for our guests or generally for our panel about absolutely anything. You're all going to get a little Comic Book Club prize pack with a bumper sticker, a magnet, and a button. But we're also going to give away some Blu-ray sets to the absolute best questions. We're going to have these folks determine what they are. So make your questions good. That's all I'm saying.
No fucking around.
Yeah. No fucking around, you guys. I saw this hand.
Blu-rays on the line, which is like... It's like before the internet, that's what we watched.
What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Kevin, and you talked some about formative comics that you read as a kid. What are some other titles, and they could be comics or they could be other media, that you think were so formative as a kid that have, that have informed what you do as an adult?
Ooh. Formative.
For me, I my dad taught me how to read with comics. So like my brother was like super into baseball cards, and the baseball card shop had comics in it, right? And so I was this little kid, and I wanted all these shiny, bright, colorful things, and my dad was like, I'll buy them for you if you learn how to read. And I was probably about like 13, the time.
Yeah.
That joke never fucking works. No, I was probably like 4, right? It was first like Green Lantern and Spider-Man, and then honestly, Venom. It was a big deal for me.
So you were, that was one of the first comics you ever
read? Yeah.
Oh, so that.
So like when I took over.
Full circle, man. That's
for real, man. Like when I took over Venom, I took him over on his 30th anniversary. And I'm 35, and I was there for the beginning of it, right?
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, I've read every issue of Venom ever since then, and actually, when I went to art school, which is where I met Trad Moore and Jeff Shaw and all these guys that I would go on to work with, I got my scholarship as a sculptor with sculptures of Venom that I did.
Wait, so you came in as a sculptor?
Yeah. I was a sculptor and an illustrator. I actually hadn't written a word my entire life until 2010.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's when you learned to read, finally.
Yeah, that's when I finally cracked it. As far as like formative books that like really got me into kind of captured my imagination, wanted me to do this, or made me want to do this. Bendis's Powers was huge for me.
Wow.
There's a way to say this that's not sound like I'm being a dick, and I haven't found it yet. No. So let me just try this.
Take it up.
Yeah. I always think about, because there's so many people my age who cite Powers as an inspiration of doing this, and I always think of them as like early punk rock, where like a bunch of people in the crowd saw that and they were like, "Well, fuck, that counts. I can do that." Right, and obviously, like no one can do what Brian does. But there was like Powers came out, and it was just like people talking about comics, and like people like standing around just having conversations. And I had never seen that. I had never, you know, I grew up as like an Image kid in like the 90s and stuff, and it was all just like this big. It was very artist focused, right?
Yeah.
And so I grew up wanting to be an artist, and then I read Bendis's stuff, and I was like, oh my god, like that's just like natural people. Talking.
I'll just
you know?
Do the words, actually. Now.
Yeah, I'll just. That sounds way easier. Yeah.
It is funny you say that because back those, especially when the Image launched, it was like, this seems so hard to do.
It was
like you have to either be a writer and an artist or be able to write a splash page in a way.
Right.
Like it's more of an impenetrable.
It was a, you were looking at masters at the height of their craft, right?
Right.
And then like, Vertigo at the same time, right? People want to talk a lot of shit about the 90s, but like the 90s were also the British invasion was also then too, right? There was also like Ellis and Ennis and Gaiman and Moore and all these guys were just coming over through the Vertigo line. And so you had like all the greatest writers doing Vertigo stuff, and you had all the greatest artists doing Image stuff. It was such an inspirational time. And then fucking Wildstorm hit, and it was all those writers and all those artists, and it was the best comic books ever fucking made.
Yo, I remember that summer when those came out, my brother and I grew up in the country. There wasn't a comic book store near us, way upstate New York. So we ordered our comics and they were mailed to us.
Yeah.
And so we thought that when they came out, that's when they were mailed to us. It's not how it worked. It was like months later.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Every day we would literally run to the mailbox, open it, and be like, fuck! No, it's not. And just like that level of desperation for these things.
Totally.
Was what, that's my formative experience, is not having comics.
Judah, do you have any sort of... I know you mentioned Nova earlier, but do you have any sort of formative experience?
Well, as far as my book goes, these weren't comic books, but they were books of drawings and cartoons. B. Kleban in the 70s did several books. One was called Never Eat Anything Bigger Than Your Head, and Tiny Footprints. And these were... His most famous one's probably one called Cats. And these were very popular in the 70s. And the Cats was more kind of mainstream. But the other ones were really kind of like... A lot of them were kind of just bizarre, hilarious, dirty, sexual. probably rated R, X-rated. Some of them, you know, some black and white drawings. And
Tijuana Bibles kind of thing?
I don't know the reference. I don't know.
Oh, Tijuana Bibles is just like little dirty mini comics, like little like stapled together type shit that people would like pass around.
I'll check that out.
Check out Tijuana. You would dig because they would skirt around copyright law, so it'd be like fucked up Batman comics and stuff like that.
It'd be like parody comics.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You would
These were really out there. Like he'd have. I remember one comic. It was one cartoon. It just said it was just this really heavy guy sitting on another guy, covering his whole body, and it just says, "Dirty fat person sits on president's face." And it was so great.
You could republish that, like, now and be a fucking
no big
hero.
Deal.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's this timeless thing about, you know, the regular person, you know, striking back at authority on such a simple level,
right?
And it really works, you know. So he did all. It was just really. It was almost like. Maybe more like a more bizarre and intellectual version of The Far Side.
I was going to say, from your book, there's a Far Side kind of element to it, right?
So B. Cleban is really cool stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, really cool.
That's great. Cool. Yeah.
Pete, do you have an answer for this one?
Well, it's funny that you're talking, because like my comic book shop was also a baseball card place.
Yeah, of course.
What was great for me was baseball cards were so much more popular that I would go in and trade my baseball cards that I got from my dad for comics, and I had to, like, hide them.
And your dad was like, hold on to this for the rest of your life. Yeah, and you were like, I'm going to swap this tomorrow for any, literally any comic book.
Yeah. But it worked
and
out
that's
great
what you've
for
been
me.
Estranged from your father.
Yeah,
since.
Yeah, he hates me. But
so that that affects your life.
I found love in comics, so that's all that matters.
The ultimate father is a comic book.
Yeah.
That's the way I
feel. He won't hit you.
You mean a comic book won't?
Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. All right, I don't want to get into it.
No, we can get into it later.
Yeah, should we get into it?
No, let's
how much
it.
Time do we have here?
Let's talk about Hank
years? Yeah. We got a couple of years, right? We can get into this?
Yeah, let's definitely get into this.
Great.
We've all been leading up to this.
Cool. I think that was a great question. We can get another question to you, sir, over here. What's your name? What's your question?
Name's Caesar, and my question, well, actually, this is a question I want to been asking since February, the month of love.
Ooh, what a history to this question.
Shit.
Yeah.
Long down, anyway. Guys.
It's almost next February.
Yeah. I'm not going to wait that long. Okay, so I knew a performer once who bragged that he loved Batman so much, he'd bend over and blow the bat down, so to speak. With that said...
Wait, you're talking about fucking
what
Batman?
Is happening right now?
Well, blow the bat down, wasn't
let's
me?
Let's do it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I can predict your question, and yes. Let me answer
the answer is yes.
Okay. Wait. What would you do for your favorite superhero?
What would I do?
And do you
it sounds like you mean sexually.
Yeah.
Right. Do you specifically mean sexually?
Not necessarily.
Caesar's been drinking.
Yeah, Caesar's been drinking.
What would you do... for like a Klondike bar or your favorite superhero?
What would you do, like, as a favor? Or do you mean, like, literally?
Sure.
Well, like, what am I getting out of it, I guess, is the question. Like, do I get to, like, have their gear, their powers or some shit? Or
No.
Nothing, just to say thanks.
Your favorite comic character walks up to you and says, hey, I need a favor.
Yeah.
What are you willing to do?
I feel like...
I just want to say I appreciate you taking this, Dottie, because that's not how favors work.
Yeah. I feel like I do a lot for superheroes currently.
Yeah.
I feel like I do a lot for them. As for Batman, Batman's a billionaire who beats up poor people in the street, so he can get fucked. Yeah. And do a fucking thing for
that's
Batman.
That's the real lesson, is Batman can get fucked by this person.
And he will. He will.
Do you guys have an answer?
Yeah, how would you guys fuck Batman?
That's a great question.
How would I fuck Batman? I'd kill his parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Then he's really fucked.
Yeah, no, really
I think he's not killing his parents. Really
fucked.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, then he's just a rich asshole.
Yeah.
The ultimate punishment. I feel like with Batman, you have to lay out a little mystery. He loves a little.
Well, he is a detective.
You don't want to be too easy.
Exactly. You want him to let his bat dick out.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's on him.
You're not fucking better than that joke. I think you're better than that joke.
His utility belt. It has a little flap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's forward this to Joel Schumacher. He could answer this question.
That's what that entire movie
super
was
easy.
About.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I think we crushed that question.
I think we
fucking nailed
that.
Yeah.
Pete, real quick, how would you fuck Batman?
Punisher. You know, I take him on a date.
The Punisher?
You know.
Oh, so you wouldn't fuck him, you just romance him.
Yeah, I would, you know. We'd go see a movie, but nobody would die, hopefully.
I feel like canonically Bruce Wayne's not overly fond of theater dates.
Yeah, he's not a movie guy. This
no,
point. Absolutely. Great question.
Great question.
Great one. Do we have another question from somebody? You sure?
Yeah. There's another.
What's your name? What's your question?
All right, I'm John. One of my favorite parts of American Splendor was Toby talking about Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
Because obviously, nerd back then, negative connotation. Good people being, like, you know, tarred with that bush, as it were. In today's society, with, like you say, nerd becoming like a cool thing, geek being a cool thing, is there a space for that kind of movie, or are we just going to be looking at the Joker now?
Well, that's fuck.
Wow. Well, that's a great question, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm probably too old and out of the loop to know if in some circles does nerd still mean that, or is there a different word for it now? You know, where it's, because you're right, it was a really it was meant to be a put down and to try to keep a person down. You know, that's right. How it was used. You know?
And like truly, Revenge of the Nerds was like everyone, they saw that title and they were like, oh, I know what that means.
Right.
Like now, if you released a movie, it was like, it's called Revenge of the Nerds. Everyone would be like,
yeah,
what does that
it'd
be what do
real,
you mean?
I mean, it'd be dangerous. I mean, the guy's question was kind of on point, where it's like, a Revenge of the Nerds kind of power fantasy film today is the Joker. It's a cat who gets fucking laughed at and then goes and murders a bunch of people, right?
A really sad state of everything, A, but also B, what we think outsiders now. Back in Revenge of the Nerds, was like, all they wanted was to just be normal. They wanted to play their electric violin and go on a date. And now it's like, Revenge of the Nerds, he murders a bunch of people.
Right, yeah.
Randomly.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because like I remember I just turned 35, and I think that I'm part of the last generation of people that grew up being like actively made fun of for reading comics and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it's like you were saying, like it's changed so much that I don't even know what that. I think it's turned so much to at a certain point, nerd culture has gotten so. I don't want to say entitled to a certain degree, a certain subsections of it,
right.
Where the tide has turned so much, or that they have become the oppressors and the gatekeepers of their own culture.
Yeah.
They've turned into the ogres and the bad guys of Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that. Like, I saw this person, they were walking down the street. They're a lot younger than me, and I was like. They were wearing a Batman t-shirt, and I was like, Jim Lee, dude, that's a fucking great Batman. And they were like, what? And I was like, I wanted to beat the shit out of them. You know,
you're the bad guy in that story.
I went from getting beat up for that to then wanting to do that.
Yeah. Because I remember growing up, like, you would, because, like, wearing Batman shirts and, like, Star Wars shirts and these kinds of things, you would, that's how you found your family in crowds and stuff, you would walk on and be like, bro, so, like, Spawn? Like, for real, Spawn?
Yeah.
And that's how you found your friends and stuff now, you know? And now it's so much, there's so much, I think but honestly, any subculture that you see in like the punk stuff and the metal scene, all these kinds of stuff, whenever something that is kind of treasured and becomes a safety net for people who are marginalized, whenever it becomes exposed and expanded upon to the masses, those people who were in it in the beginning tend to turn on it, and it tends to turn volatile until it all settles down. And the great common denominator of all these things is Hot Topic. And once it goes into Hot Topic, and once mothers start buying it, everyone fucking settles down. It's just like, okay, let's not get into fights about fucking Pokemon. And then it gets neutralized.
But I do think comic books have a weird thing where people have been able to retain that ownership despite that mass appeal. Like, the fact that you'll see anyone on the street wearing a Thing t-shirt, it's like, well, I have more ownership of that than that person.
Right.
It's like becomes that sort of gradation of the judgment.
The gradation is a great example of it. There's levels to things, right? Like, I've been writing Venom for a few years now, and I'm very well known within the readers, people who read comics, as the Venom guy, right?
Yeah.
But, like, just coming here, just walking over here, I walked past like 9 cats wearing Venom t-shirts who don't know who the fuck I am. And but that's awesome. Like, I love that nowadays there are multiple access points to anything, you know? And you don't have to be judged by your level of knowledge on a thing, you know? Like, it's cool that like Judah knows the kind of fucking underground cool shit that he digs, and he's no less of a fucking you know, comic book, like a part of the comic book family than we are. And I think that's the kind of shit that we should support. Like, instead of seeing someone wearing a Joker shirt or a Watchmen shirt and being like, who fucking inked that? Like, it's just fucking rad that you found it, man. Yeah. Like, however you find it, you find it. Unless it's the Big Bang Theory, which is fucking the devil.
Yes.
That show.
Exactly. We can all unite against that.
That show actively hates you.
Yeah. Well, it's over. We killed it, so it's fine. Do we have any other questions? Any
last
other questions from anybody? Ooh, another one over here. Let's get it. What is your name and what is your question?
I'm Ronnie. This is for everybody, but especially for Judah. Kind of a Fight Club question, but let's just pretend we're all superheroes or superpowers or whatever.
He wants to fight you.
No. I want to
ask. Do you want to fucking fight?
I want to ask, who do you want to fight? They have to be a celebrity, and what's their weakness?
Oh wow!
Oh boy!
Nice.
Well, first of all, if they're a celebrity, they're not going to be good fighters, unless they're actually a fighter.
Yes, there's a celebrity fighter.
There are fighting celebrities.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's anyone I want to celebrity I want to fight.
You've entered a pacifist.
What's that?
You've entered a pacifist portion of your life.
Well, you know, I think you know, with the amount of intensity I bring, I don't think any of them would. I think they would all back out.
Well, no one's trying to fight the world champ.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, champion of the world.
Yeah,
so, yeah. I don't think any of them would do that.
Real life style. Like, I don't want to fight nobody. I don't want to fight anybody. Like comic books, though. Like I don't know. Like I feel like I'm not gonna win shit. Like, I was like a kind of a pasty white dude from Austin. Like, I'm not going to fight anybody. Don't clap for me being pasty.
Austin.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Austin.
People go. Love a
There are absolutely people that I would fight off mic. There's absolutely a big section
I'm glad you didn't land on any nouns right then.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any celebrities you would fight? And I think we didn't answer the
just
other
for
part
fun
of the
though. Okay, like, if we're just homies,
yeah.
It's like a fun, playful fight.
Yeah.
Like a slap.
I feel like I would want to fight Jim Steranko just because I feel like I want to see how strong he is. Just I want to see how bad I get my ass kicked.
Yeah, I feel like he has some old
dude. Jim Steranko fucks you up, dude.
I'll quick story about that. Actually, I moderated a panel for Jim Steranko at Keystone Comic Con in Philly
very recently,
and he told this story. Which the question that I started off with was like, "Hey, you helped create Nick Fury. Where did you start with that?" And he went all the way back to his childhood and started talking through his childhood and. I think maybe confessed to several murders while he was doing it. I'm not 100% sure. But as part of it, he was like, yeah, and I grabbed this guy used to grab me by the arm just like this. And he reached out and he grabbed my arm. And it hurt so badly.
Dude.
So fuck, you lost a fight to Jim
Steranko. No, I lost a fight to
Jim Steranko, because if you go to Jim Steranko's booth and he gives you the full throttle handshake,
it
is a vice grip. That dude's going to outlive all of us.
Here's my theory. I think he's a ghost that came back to life.
Have you guys been watching The Righteous Gemstones?
Yes.
Do you know that's just Jim Steranko? Walter Goggins' character.
He's Baby Billy.
He's Baby Billy.
He's Baby Billy.
There's no 100%. Way that wasn't intentional.
Whoever's doing Jim Steranko's wigs, which is a person's job, is also doing Walton Goggins' gigs.
Yeah,
wigs in Righteous Gemstones.
All right, I think we kind of answered your question.
I think we covered some real esoteric parts of the culture. Go ahead.
No, I used to do a line saying I one time I beat up Wolverine so bad he applied for a transfer to DC Comics.
Wow. Amazing.
Excellent. Any more questions real quick? No, nobody? Okay, then we're going to give away some Blu-ray DVD sets. That was only four questions. But, Judah, do you have a favorite question out of those?
You know, there were a lot of great questions.
Sure, lots of
them. One of them was about love and Batman.
Right.
And, I mean, it's hard to top love.
Yeah.
Sir, I think your question about the nerd question was really good.
Yeah.
That was a, you know, that really had a lot of levels to it.
That's cool.
Whose question was that? Over there?
John.
All right. Would you like The Flash Season 5, Doom Patrol Season 1, or Supergirl Season 4? Doom Patrol, great choice. Highly underrated show. Everybody should check it out. It was really superb.
That's a Blu-ray.
Yes, it's a Blu-ray, so don't...
Good luck playing that.
Good luck. We're not giving away Blu-ray players. Donnie, do you have a favorite question?
I go with that dude slamming my fucking Batman.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Fuck that Batman.
Here we go. What would you like, Flash or Supergirl?
He wants Supergirl.
You got a crush on Supergirl.
You really filled in the gap we were thinking.
Yeah.
And Justin and Pete, do you guys have a choice?
No, please.
Of the remaining questions?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Anybody? You go ahead. I'm going to get to that gentleman right there.
Gentleman right here. Here you go. Here's a Flash set. Kevin, we will get you something special as well. Don't you worry.
The Flash is very fast.
All right. A couple of things before we wrap up here that we should probably plug, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I think so. A couple of things. We do our regular show Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. at the Pit Loft, so definitely come on down. That's totally free. 8 p.m. every single week, as well as the podcast. We actually do a bunch of different podcasts. We have a Riverdale podcast called Riverdale After Dark that is coming back next Wednesday, so definitely check that out. Yes. Also, Watchmen Watch, our Watchmen podcast, is gearing up to the show. We're recapping, breaking down every issue of Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' classic comic book series. It's been a lot of fun.
It's very fun. Nothing fucked up about that. It's great.
Yeah. So that's enjoyable. Plus other podcasts that you can check out. Pete, what do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Hey. Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclubalive.com for this podcast. More, you can subscribe and comment on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Android, or the app of your choice. Couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Donnie for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
Judah! We want to thank everybody here at Caveat, but most of all, we want to thank you all. Thanks for coming out. Enjoy Comic-Con. Good night. Baby.